This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
All right, first week of OTAs, I believe, in the books for the Texans. I think today was the last day. We got to go out on Tuesday. Next week, I believe the day is Wednesday, where they will have things on display for the media for a little while. The main thing, the main takeaway right now for me, at least, is there's no tweets about any injuries showing up on my timeline. And that's because I think about Washington and Reuben Foster, and I'm like, God, if you're a Redskin fan, you got to feel cursed right now. All their quarterbacks get their legs snapped in half last year. You go out and get Reuben Foster, who's, you know, at the end of the day, probably not the easiest guy to root for in the world. But they're hoping for big things from him, a former first-round pick, and he tears his ACL on, like, literally the first snap at an OTA session that he has for the Washington Redskins. So everybody appears to be healthy,
yes,
or recovering from injuries or taking care of their bodies.
You know, one thing that I heard Seth Payne earlier in the week talk about, how the offensive line looked in his eyes relative to the way they've looked in the past. I heard
physically.
Him say, yeah, and you know, when, I mean, I always want to make the point of, I mean, there's a difference. There's two different 6'5", 315s. You know, what I just threw that number out there. Whatever the average height weight is on this offensive line, I want you to know that if somebody says, well, Centrell Henderson was 6'5", you know, 310 last year, well, he could be a total different 6'5", 310, 315 this year. And so when a guy like Seth Payne, who obviously played in the league and played in the trenches, when he takes notice of the different body comp essentially of the offensive line, that's big, man. I mean, that is absolutely paramount relative to this offensive line taking the next step. Whether you're talking about the Sharping kid and the Howard kid that were draft picks and they look different, or you're talking about some of the guys that have been here 2 years and 3 years and their bodies are finally starting to take to the fact that they're professionals and they're maturing and they're developing and they're eating right and they're working out year-round and they're doing the right things to develop their bodies specifically, that's big, man. And so when Seth says that, Sean, that means a lot to me. That's my – as listening to you guys throughout the week, that's – when he said that, I was like, boom, I love hearing that right there.
Well, and John Harris said yesterday, when John Harris came on with us yesterday at this time – and we asked him what stood out to you at OTAs, he kind of went down the same road, and he brought up the offensive line. And I think the thing that Johnny brought up, and Seth to a similar degree also, but Johnny was bringing up, you know, different stats to back this up. It's not, you know, 6'5", 315, which I know you're just throwing out there, like, that's a dimension you see quite a bit on NFL rosters. This particular group of offensive linemen, particularly these tackles, are sort of off the chart compared to the average offensive lineman, in that they're all really tall. Sharping is 6'6". Like, Titus Howard's the shortest one out of all of them. He's 6'5".
And not just the new guy. Chantrell Henderson's
right.
A house.
Chantrell's 6'7". Sharping is 6'7". Julion Davenport is 6'7", with long arms. There was one other guy that I'm missing here. Oh, Matt Khalil, 6'7".
Yeah.
These guys are all really, really tall.
Well, that height, I mean, if you can play low and if you're built right, then the bigger the better. The problem is, I remember I played with Flozell Adams, Flozell the Hotel Adams out of Michigan State with the Cowboys, and he was one of the biggest human beings I've ever been around structurally. I mean, he was a 6'7 guy, but his shoulders were unbelievably broad, and he was thick from his ankles to his neck. And that's one of those things where if you look at a guy and he looks like one of them Popeye's biscuits standing up on toothpicks,
yeah,
we're in trouble.
Right.
If that sucker's thick from his neck down to his ankles, then you got a guy that, one, can he's less likely to get injured. I'm not saying he can't, but he's less likely to get injured. And they're absolute bulldozers. They're movers. They move the line of scrimmage when they're built like that. The first one that comes to mind is an old Arkansas guy, Jason Peters, who's at in Philadelphia. You look at him, he is thick from his neck to his ankles. And Ogden, back in the day, big-time left tackle, one of the best to ever do it. He was a big dude now, but he was thick top to bottom. And so when I hear former NFL defensive linemen say these dudes, they look different. The body comp is different.
That registers.
That registers, yeah. Man. That tells me, check that box. One step in the right direction to getting this offensive line right and where it needs to be.
Wasn't Larry Allen in Dallas when you
Larry
were there?
Larry Allen was a bad man.
Oh,
hey,
man.
You talk about thick from his neck to his ankles. Now, that dude was a different build. But he was just a freak. I mean, I watched that dude bench like 700 pounds. And he's got the ball. They hadn't even racked it yet, and Rocket Ishmael lays across his belly on the bench. And I'm like, what? Rock, you're going to get squished. I mean, Rock ain't, I mean, you know, you're a Notre Dame guy. Rock, I mean, that sucker's a little bitty. He ain't no bigger than a hiccup. And he could have got smushed by that weight, and he just, L.A. just racked it big, just like it wasn't no big deal. 700 pounds. 700 pounds. I watched him, Larry Allen, I watched him. He pulled one time, and we're just like in a little, we're in shells. So it's, I don't remember if it was a Thursday before a game or a Friday before a game, but we're in shells. And I told y'all, Dwayne Goodrich was a second-round draft pick that just didn't really pan out. So some of the veterans, they picked on him a little bit. And Larry Allen pulls, and I'll be damned if Dwayne Goodrich wasn't the contained guy on the look team. L.A. put two hands in his chest and literally just chest pressed him. And Dwayne looked like you threw a little four-year-old little boy up on the edge of a hill. I mean, it was like he threw him about 8 yards, and he landed kind of on an incline on the hill and just laid there. And I was like, boy, you poor bastard. You drew the wrong straw today, brother.
It's an all-time great we're talking about.
Oh, Larry's the best I've ever been around, man. I'm going to tell you, there's two things. When I was playing at the Cowboys, not to get too far off script, Sean.
It's all right. Well, we'll
when I was
back.
Playing out there, I was – Emmitt Smith was a guy that I was a Cowboy fan, so I was like, man, you know, before I got there, I was like, Emmitt's washed up, man. He got to go. And then I went and – when I was I remember standing behind the line in practice, and the Cowboys were a big zone team, and they toss Emmitt the ball, and he started – he's kind of easing towards the sideline, just floating out there. And I'm like, where's he going to go? And he puts his foot in the ground and gets north, and I'm thinking, hell, he's going to run right up the back of Larry Allen. And I'm talking about literally right as he got there, it just parted, and he hit a crease that you – I mean, he just saw things before – they ever happened. Him and L.A., man, when you watched them practice for 5 minutes, you were like, they're Hall of Fame. That's Hall of Fame type stuff.
Seven-time first-team All-Pro.
Coach, Larry Allen, I mean, I've never been around – I was never around a player that was more well-respected because of his style of play. You got a lot of guys that are just great leaders, and not that Larry wasn't. Larry did it without – he literally didn't talk at all, hardly ever at all. But you talk about a guy that strictly from his play was the most respected dude in the league, and he didn't have to tell people about it. Nobody really in the media, they talked about him being a great lineman, but they didn't talk about him being the best ever. He didn't get – back then, guys didn't get just propped up by the media to be respected. He earned every bit of it by absolutely being a monster on the field, man. He was fun to watch.
You may have this in front of you, Rich, because it looks like you looked up the number of Pro Bowls or number of All-Pro berths that he had. Care to name what college Larry Allen went to?
Sonoma State.
Never heard of it.
Never heard of it.
Yep.
Well,
Napa.
I'm reading a little bit about what I didn't know about Larry Allen, and he had a very, very, very tough upbringing.
Yeah,
a lot of bad stuff. It says here he was stabbed 12 times in the head, shoulder, and neck by a neighbor while trying to protect his brother when he was 10 years old.
Hey, look, when L.A. came through one time, and I don't know why, but L.A. liked me. I don't know why he even gave a rip. I was in the locker room. No clue. But the dude liked me for some reason. We're in training camp in San Antonio, and he comes by the locker. First of all, we're in training camp. It's Parcells' year, and Parcells says, I don't want anybody driving from our hotel to the Dome. You can get a bike. We got buses, whatever you want. It literally was a five-minute stroll. Don't want nobody driving. L.A. drives, he comes in with all his windows down and Escalade up on 22s, just banging that West Coast rap. And he's like underneath the stadium, parks right next to the locker room, and walks in. And it's just L.A. doing those kind of things. Parcells goes, hey, this is going to be the hardest camp you guys have ever been. We're going to have 10 straight two-a-days. And L.A. said, y'all are going to have 10 straight two-a-days. I'm the best offensive lineman in the league. I ain't going back-to-back.
He'd come a long way from Sonoma State.
Before Sonoma State,
JUCO, Butte College in Oroville, California.
I bring this up not to say that Titus Howard and Max Sharping are going to be seven-time All-Pros. I bring it up to say that Alabama State and Northern Illinois, you know what? Guys come from everywhere, man.
There's a bunch of good ones,
all about
man.
What you do once you get in the door, man.
Yeah, that's a good point.
It's unbelievable, man. I got some good stories on L.A., man. I mean, he comes through one time, Sean, real quick. He comes through after practice. He says, hey, and I don't even know if he knew my name. He said, hey, you want to go to Palm? And it was a Palms. We were in San Antonio. It was a Palm Steakhouse. I said, for lunch. And I'm thinking, that's a place I'd like to one day, if I make enough money, take my girl, you know?
Right. Like, but for a special dinner.
But I knew L.A., if he was asking me, he was paying. So I was like, yeah, L.A., I'll be. He said, meet me in the truck. And I was like, well, you talking about the truck that ain't supposed to be here? He said, yeah. So I meet him in the truck, and we go to the Palm. Literally, there wasn't five words spoke. We sit at the bar. Dude orders two shots of Louis. This is between practice, between two-a-days now, practices. He orders two shots of Louis, that high-end.
Really expensive.
Yeah, it's off. It's out of my budget, so yeah. I ain't never ordered it. Two of them. He gets a cigar, dips his cigar in one of them, and then sips on the other one. And I get me a steak. We both eat our steak. We get in the car, go back, have another full practice.
He's got Louis swishing around.
He's got two Louis and a cigar.
And a cigar.
And I'm just like, gosh.
Come a long way from Compton where he grew up.
Oh, my God,
yeah,
man.
That is strong. Yeah. That is strong.
And he's a great dude, man.
So what are the things the Texans are trying to accomplish this week and the next couple weeks, Clint? Like, what are the, you know, if you're O'Brien, you're jotting down the three big things you're trying to accomplish. What are they?
Well, I think to get the offensive line across the board processing. I mean, like you said, there was a lot of movement at practice. It looked like a blitz drill at practice. I mean, I think you're seeing, you're getting these guys' wheels turning of their processing, right? So mentally, and not just the offensive line, but everybody, I think you highlight the offensive line because it was a struggle last year. You get these guys processing, the young ones and the old ones, get them processing, get them on the same page, get them communicating. You know, those things are so critical whether you have pads on or not. So first and foremost, processing and communicating. You've got to, regardless of who's up front, that has to happen. And that would be 1B. 1A for me would be the guys like J.J. Watt, Clowney, if he were there, but that's one more reason why the red flag is there. But Deshaun Watson, Hopkins, Reed, these guys that are Texans, that have been Texans before, you got to set the standard for the – and I'm going to say there's 30-plus new faces if you count free agents and rookies. That was more than that if you count the
undrafted guys. 20 of those guys.
Yeah, so, I mean, you're looking at between 30 and 40 new guys that don't know how the Texans do it. And I've always said this. The sooner a team is player-led versus coach-fed, the better off they're going to be. The new guys need to take the field, and they need to see J.J. Watt is strapped. Helmet strapped, shoes are tied up, he's ready to rock and roll. When the horn blows, he's not coming down the steps, crossing over the street with his pads flopping everywhere and his helmet in his hand, talking about, hey, I'm on my way, you know, joking around. They need to set the tone immediately. How do you do things in Houston, Texas, at OTAs and at mini camps and at training camp? How do you do things, and you set that tone now? Because here's the truth of the matter, Sean, is if JJ don't do that, if Hop don't do that, if Deshaun don't do that, if they're guys that walk down the stairs with just late and all that kind of stuff, that's what losers do. And winners don't even think about it. They just do. You know what I mean? Losers hate doing the right thing. Winners just do it. It's part of their DNA. And so there's no gray area. There's no, well, we'll get it later. You either set the tone today or this week, the first time, whatever they do when the first horn blows, you better be strapped and ready. Because if you're not, you're setting the tone, and these young dudes are going to think it's okay. And they're going to think that's what NFL football is about. I'm picking up a paycheck. I'm half-assing my way through practice. And then I'll get serious when team rolls around. Or do you strap it up from the jump, and are you ready to play? So to me, that's what champions do. And if Bill O'Brien's spending his time worrying about whether guys are strapped up and ready to go, if he's spending the first 5 minutes or 10 minutes of practice trying to get guys motivated to practice, then it's not this ain't the team that we think it is. I'll tell you, Junior Seau was hands down the number one guy when I'm talking about a tone setter, number one guy that I ever cross paths with. Junior Seau would come out of the chute with the quarterbacks every day at practice for quarterback walkthrough, not team walkthrough.
You were together in Miami, right?
We were together in Miami, right. Two different years. And Junior would walk out with us. He would start doing crunches, push-ups, and running hundreds just to get loose, just to get his mind right before any of the other defense was even out there. And then if you're in a walkthrough, that dude strapped up and going a whole different. He just set the tone, and if you didn't match it, then he was gonna rip you about it. And so it just you got to have those kind of guys to be champions. And to me, that's what OTAs are about. You're veterans. You knock a little rust off but you set the tone of how things are going to function on a day-to-day basis. And your rookies, it's a cerebral time for you. Show this coaching staff how much of this playbook you can retain and apply. How much of this playbook can you execute? Can you retain? Can you communicate? That's what it's about for the young dudes at this point in time.
They're studying at home at night.
They're studying at home, and you know what? If you ain't, it's easy. It's an easy message for the coaches, yeah, Sean. Yeah. It's one of those deals like, hey, here's the playbook. Go home and study your ass off and come back, and things are going to be okay. If you don't study, when that whistle blows, we're going to know about it. You ain't got enough talent. You're not in college anymore. If you don't know what's going on, you will not survive. I don't care if you're Titus Howard. You will not survive. Yeah. And so it's definitely a cerebral approach for these young dudes. And for the vets, it's all about setting the tone, man.
Sure does help that coach when you got a guy like Junior Seau setting the tone and keeping teammates accountable. When it leaves that kind of off the list of things the coach has to worry about, at least as much as he might otherwise. And it feels like on this team, J.J. Watt and Deshaun Watson are probably those guys. I'm sure DeAndre Hopkins is one of those guys.
You hope they are. You hope they are. I'll tell you a quick one. When I was with the network, I always wondered, like, what? I loved Kevin Sumlin. I loved A&M. They're extremely talented. Why can they not get over the 8-9 win hump and get to that 10-11 and make a bunch of noise? I went my last year with the network. I went to a practice, and I'm standing there, and that old buzzer rings. At first buzzer, first period rings. There's at least 15 dudes walking in with different colored shorts on, pads, helmet in hand, shoes untied, and you go, "Yep, that is exactly what Alabama doesn't do right there."
You just made about 1,000 Aggies drive off the road.
No doubt
with that.
No doubt about it.
The good thing is, you know, it's not happening anymore.
We would hope, right? With Jimbo Fisher.
Yeah, Jimbo Fisher ain't putting up with that.
Yeah. Oh, God.
Isn't that awesome?
All right. Well, and now if you go to University of Arizona, you're feeling that way, I guess.
I don't know. He may have righted the ship right there.
Maybe. We'll see.
Hey, I'm of the group that I believe Kevin Sumlin lost control of that group. I don't think that was on him.
All right. There we go.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.